So, folks, my name is Michelle Simpson, and I'd like to thank you for tuning into Block Talk. Regular listeners know that we here at Block Talk center Black voices, Black thought, and Black vision. And if you're new to Block Talk, thank you so much for joining us today. So I've got a question for you to begin. I wonder how many of you have benefited from, say, a mentor, a role model, someone perhaps older than you, maybe not, someone who listened to you, someone you could talk to, someone you could share your dreams with. The research indicates that Black youth who have mentors are at least 55% more likely to enroll in college, 78% more likely to volunteer regularly, and over 130% more likely to hold leadership positions. And so in beginning with that and asking you to think about your own experiences, I am so delighted to introduce you to someone whose passion is working with young people. And today here at Black Talk, we are joined by Velveeta Golightly Howell. Velveeta, welcome to Black Talk.
Hi, how are you, Michelle?
It's wonderful to have you. It's wonderful, wonderful to have you, and long overdue. So Velveeta, let me start with this. You are an attorney, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You attended the University of Colorado School of Law, and you were one of two students in your class. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And as I understand it, you were the eighth Black woman to graduate from the CU Law School. Do I have that correct? I feel like I have you on the stand. Okay.
That's also right.
And then one other thing I wanted to ask you about is this whole mentoring piece, because you and I have had some conversations about it and what a passion it is of yours. I understand that you were in fact mentored by Colorado's first Black woman prosecutor. Is that correct?
Yes, I was that prosecutor, the first Black woman prosecutor, state prosecutor, in terms of representing the city and county of Denver.
Got it. But was there somebody who mentored you when you were in that role?
Absolutely. Her name is Brooke Wanneke. I refer to her in the present tense, even though she passed away in September of 2014, because to this day, Brooke remains in my spirit.
So tell us a bit about that relationship. How did you meet? How did that unfold? What did the mentoring relationship look like?
Sure. Michelle, you know, I am actually a person who believes in the divine power, that there is a spirit much higher than can be found on this earth. And one day at CU Law School, early in my second semester of my second year, Claudia Jordan, who would become the first Black female judge in Colorado, was standing at a board where all the positions for the summer were posted. At that time, we didn't have computer-generated kinds of job postings. We had to look on a board. And I already had gotten two offers for the summer, and I had my dream interview scheduled the next week.
Okay.
And I walked over and asked Claudia, "Do you see anything interesting for yourself?" And she said, "No, Val, I don't. However, I see the perfect position for you." And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And she said, "Look right here. There is an opening for paid interns at the Denver District Attorney's Office. And I think you'd be perfect for, you know, one of those internships." And my response was, "What is a district attorney?" Mm-hmm. Because I had never heard that phrase before and didn't have a clue really what professional that would be.
Okay.
And she explained to me that that is the prosecutor, and that office is the largest prosecutor's office in Colorado. And I, again, think you'd be perfect. And I said, Claudia, I have my dream interview set up next week. And I don't think that the Denver DA's office would be interested in me. And more so, I don't want to do any criminal law.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, I do think you should apply for it. And she said that so many times that I took that in as a sign mm-hmm. from the power that I'm led by. And I said, well, I'll send in my resume, but I don't expect anything to come of it. So mm-hmm. I sent my resume in, and the mail was really quick at that time. So about 2 days later, I get this phone call, and this woman says to me, hi, I'm Flossie, and I'm calling because Brooke Warnicke would like to speak with you and actually schedule an interview.
Hmm.
When can you come in? Can you come in tomorrow? No, I can't come in tomorrow, but I can come in the day after. So I went into the Denver DA's office on Colfax Street at the time.
I remember exactly where it was located.
Yes, I do. It's so vivid in my mind. And I walked in the door. And at the time, they had a receptionist desk right at the front. And there was a receptionist there named Marilyn. And when I walked through the door, Marilyn stood up and actually came from behind her desk and held out her hand, and she said, hi, we're so happy to have you. Brooke's been looking forward to meeting you. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what in the world is going on? So Marilyn says, come with me. Brooke's office is in the back of the library. So we walk into the library. There are six attorneys sitting there, all white attorneys, all male, with the exception of one who would become a dear friend of mine and a future Denver District Court judge. And Marilyn took me back, and Brooke at the time had two executive assistants and one paralegal. And so they all greeted me, and the paralegal named Jan, she said, well, Brooke's right here. Come on in. And so she took me to the door, and I see this little lady about 4 feet 9 inches tall sitting across the room at this little table in these formal chairs, high back chairs. And she jumps up and she runs across the floor. Now, at the time, she had to be about 60 something years old. And so she had on these high heels, and she runs across the floor, and she grabs me by both hands, and she says, come on in, I've been waiting for you. I'm so happy to meet you. And unlike in a formal interview, she said, come sit here, we'll have tea. So we sit, you know, I'm in one high back, she's in the other. And the table's right there in the middle of us with this fine china. And she just starts talking to me. And the first few questions were about me and whether I had any formal speaking experience. Those were the only questions she asked in terms of the position itself.
Okay. That's it.
That's it. And then she talked to me for almost 2 hours. We just talked about me. What, you know, I envisioned for my career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where did I come from? My parents, my siblings, that sort of thing. And so then she grabs me by the hand. I know this is a much longer story than you expected.
Oh, it's all good.
And she begins to walk me into the law library. And at that point, they were still there. Those attorneys were still there. And she introduces me to each one. And I had already met them, of course, but she introduced me again. And then she left me there. She said, I'll be back in about 15 minutes. And she left. And I just sat and talked to these attorneys. She came back exactly 15 minutes later. She grabbed me by the hands again. Then she started walking me throughout the office. And all the attorneys I would meet were asking me, how do you know Norm? And my reply was, are you talking about Norm Aronson, who's in the clinic at CU Law? And their response was, no.
They were talking Norm Early.
Norm Early. And I said, I don't know Norm Early. Who is he? And they just, you know, started to say, oh, he's like the best trial attorney you could ever meet and that sort of thing. So Brooke took me throughout that building, introduced me to everyone. And I was so amazed because everybody interacted with each other in such a friendly, family-friendly kind of way, calling each other by first names. Brooke would always ask about how each person was doing because she knew something about everybody. And then finally, she took me in to meet Chief Justice, former Chief Justice of the Colorado Supreme Court, Justice Otto Moore. And he at that time was Dale Tooley's top lieutenant. And she said, I'm leaving you here with Judge Moore, and I'll be back in 15 minutes because then I'm taking you in to meet Dale. So I sat there with this former Supreme Court Chief Justice here in the state, and he just talks to me. Just like, hey, I'm so used to seeing you. I'm going to tell you about me and my wife, you know, on a personal level, not on a professional level, but, you know, this is who we are. And what about you? And he also wanted to know about me. So Brooke came back about 15 minutes later and she took me next door to Dale's office. And the same thing happened.
It kept going.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely floored. And so she took me back to her office. We wound up chatting and she said, you will hear from us soon. And I said, okay, Brooke, it was such a pleasure to meet you and everybody in the office. I really appreciated the opportunity. So I'm escorted to the front door. And I leave thinking, oh no, you know, that was really great, but I don't have a chance in heck of being selected for this year-long paid internship with Brooke in the appellate division. And so it was so funny. The very next morning, I get this call and Brooke says, I'm hiring 4 interns. This year, I'm going to hire all of them from CU Law. And these are going to be your compatriots. So all of them were 3 white men. All of them became household names. One became the governor of the state, Bill Ritter. And so I started that position, but it was only after I called my mother and only after my dream job, the hiring authorities gave me every kind of offer a student could possibly imagine, including a full-time position at a higher level than they had ever brought in another attorney at the end of my schooling. So I had called my mother because I was wrestling with those two. I already had decided I didn't want the other positions. And I said to my mother, Mama, I just don't know what to do. And she said, well, you know, I always told you when the Lord opens a door for you, there's a reason. And you have to decide whether you're going to walk through it. And she said, just pray about it. And she also asked me the question, where did you feel most comfortable? Prayed about it. The answer to her question was easy. So that is how I ended up at the Denver District Attorney's Office.
My gosh, that is quite a story. I'm glad you shared that. That is quite a story. Well, let's start at the beginning now. I want to circle back. Okay, I want to circle back a bit. You have Alabama roots, as do I. As do I. Both my parents were born and raised in Montgomery.
Nice.
Yes. So now you're from Tuscaloosa?
I am.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought you were from Tuscaloosa. So not counting your parents, because I want to kind of stay with this mentoring role model theme. Not counting your parents, who was your first mentor?
My first mentor was my paternal grandmother, Lily Tucker Golightly. And my grandmother was someone to whom I looked up to, and she loved me so much, unconditionally. And she just poured into me the spirit of self-confidence. Mm. She was a larger sized woman, and she had Native roots. Her mother was actually Native American, indigenous, and her father was Black. And she just carried herself with such grace and decorum, and everybody just respected her. And I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, she is so wonderful. So we were very close to each other. And I would have to say that she definitely was my first mentor outside my parents.
Outside of your parents. Now, Velveeta, you were one of the first students, if I have this right, to integrate a formerly all-white public school?
Yes, that's correct, in Alabama.
Okay, and did you have any mentors then, any folks who supported you through that, again, other than your parents?
You know, Michelle, it was amazing because I've heard so many horror stories, including from my very close friends about their experiences. My experiences were almost universally positive.
Were they?
I had one mentor in particular. She was the librarian. And the library, which I understood later, had never been integrated before they started integration of the public school system there in Alabama. And the library was located directly across from my junior high middle school.
Okay.
And I loved to read. From the time I was very, very little, my parents and my grandmother had started me in school when I was 3 years old. And so I was an avid reader. And I would go to the library every single day after school. I would take back books, and the librarian would help me find others because she was very interested in what types of books I wanted to read. And so that person was, I would identify as my first mentor, white mentor, outside of my community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fabulous. I was also a voracious reader, so it would have been lovely to have somebody curate the whole reading process for me.
Absolutely.
I'm very envious as you say that. Now, when you attended, because you attended the very well-known, highly regarded HBCU Tuskegee Institute, which I have seen on a number of occasions when I visit relatives in Notasilga. And Did you have any mentors there when you were a college student?
I definitely had mentors there, and I was so glad that I had made the decision to go to Tuskegee, which was the alma mater of our oldest sibling. I chose that institution over the University of Alabama, where I would have been one of the first Blacks admitted. And Tuskegee was an eye-opener, especially after having spent 6 years in virtually all white environments. Mm-hmm. My mentor there was a man named Manning Mirabal.
Oh my gosh. You're kidding. I love how all of these stories kind of intersect, because Manning Mirabal, well, you know this, and he taught at CU Boulder for
That's a bit
before he went off to the Ohio State University. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
On to Columbia. And then he actually won the Pulitzer Prize for historic literature. And I don't have the correct name right now, but he had written the premier book on Malcolm X. And that was while he was at Columbia.
Absolutely. Oh, how interesting. Oh my gosh. I didn't know or didn't remember that there was a connection there. So that's where you met.
That's where we met.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. Wow. Well, let me ask you this, because again, you and I have spoken a bit about just how you view this idea of role models, mentors, for Black young people who are coming up. How essential you feel that is to their lives and to their not just health and well-being, but also future. And so I got to thinking a bit about this, and former, and some would say legendary, professional basketball player Charles Barkley, he infamously asserted the following. He said, "I'm not a role model. Parents should be role models. Just because I dunk a basketball doesn't mean I should raise your kids." So it's interesting when, you know, we think about just ideas about role models or who they should be or what form they should take. And I want to come back to that because I want to get your response to that. But also this idea of role models, Velveeta, is a concept that some say that it's a concept that's had its moment, but that it's from another era in some ways, and that its power, its presence, its importance has kind of lost some of its meaning and influence. Some have also suggested that although some Black young people might benefit from role models, the whole idea of role models and mentorship comes out of a kind of a deficit mindset, that somehow something needs to be fixed, or that these younger people somehow need to be fixed in some way, and that it comes out of almost like a savior mindset that middle and upper middle class folk have, whether they're white or Black, that somehow they can come in and somehow fix or save these folks. So that's a lot, but just to give you kind of the other sense, which I'm sure you've heard, or again, some kind of opposing or alternate viewpoints on role models, mentors. And again, I want to come back to where you are and where you are on that spectrum and how you see it and whether or not you see it as something that, you know, we still need to look at, we still need to embrace and step up to, those of us who can and are willing today.
Absolutely, Michelle. And first of all, I would just acknowledge that Charles Barkley is an Alabama native, as am
right. I. Right, right.
And I think that could possibly have something to do with his perspective, because it is one that I share. And I share it in the regard that I do not see celebrity athletes, actors, singers, so on and so forth, as being role models mm-hmm. for our youth. I see those who have struggled in the sense of everyday life, mm-hmm. who are willing to put themselves out there as not being perfect, mm-hmm. but interested.
Okay.
And I would disagree with the premise that role modeling and mentoring have had their day. Mm-hmm. They are so sorely needed. And with all youth, they're needed, but particularly with our youth, mm-hmm. because there are so many who never get to really have a role model in the sense that it is a person that they get to know personally, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and have someone who's interested in them and their development. I don't see role modeling and mentoring as a savior coming into our youth's lives. I see them as being persons who will enhance and help develop those coming behind.
Okay.
And I see it as a responsibility for those of us who have been on the path, who have been able to remain resilient despite the tremendous hardships and the odds against us. I actually wear a bracelet that I bought as a gift for all of the members on my nonprofit's board. And it comes from a quote from Sister Teresa. And it says, I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the waters to create many ripples. That is how I see serving in the mentoring and role modeling roles. And I can tell you personally that that has been and continues to be my greatest joy in life. I believe that that is one of the purposes for which I walk this earth. And I always tell my mentees that I get so much from them. It's not about me giving to them. It's about us sharing with each other.
When the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory,
oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon. Formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion.
You are listening to Black Talk on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be
I'm often taken by the stories, and you use the word resilience, of supposedly kind of ordinary people who have done such extraordinary things by virtue of the fact that they're still here, by virtue of the fact that they have just made it through some challenging situations that they may not even view as particularly challenging, but can really, really have so much to offer and so much to give. So I love you saying that, because I think, and I've spoken to some of these folks who will say, you know, what can I do? You know, who would want me as a mentor? Or who would view me as a role model? You know, I get up every day and I go to work, I come home. But that in and of itself is such a feat. And when we look at members of the Black community, yeah, that's a big deal. You know,
it is
a big deal, you know, in light of all of the obstacles and challenges that are there for us, you know,
that's right.
that are in the path. So
yes.
I love that.
Yes. And I would just add also, I had lots of mentors growing up, everyday women, Black women, who did exactly what you're talking about, including my mother, in terms of living their lives and doing for community. Mm-hmm. Because the one thing that we Black women share is that we are, in large respects, selfless. We're always thinking about other people. In another respect, we have this internalized sense that perhaps we're not worthy. And whatever we have done or are doing just simply by living is not valuable. And I work to change that perspective with any woman I come into contact with who has that kind of view of herself. And I can tell you, like you, I've come into contact with many of those women.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, that's a nice entree, because what I wanted to ask you about as well, Velveeta, is your organization. You are the chair, CEO and founder of Sister to Sister International Network of Professional African-American Women, Inc. And the mission, and I'm paraphrasing right now, because so, you know, some Michelle-isms here, but overall, the mission really speaks to creating this safe haven, and creating or developing communities for Black women to develop. And I think it says directly, social connectivity, encouragement, emotional support, shared knowledge, and the opportunity to network and showcase their creativity in a global environment. And what I wanted to ask you about that, Velveeta, is I wanted to ask you how it came about, how Sister to Sister came about, but then I also wanted to hear, if you wouldn't mind, sharing with us maybe an example of how that mission is embodied, how it's unfolded perhaps for a member of Sister to Sister.
Sure. Thank you for asking those questions, Michelle. I would begin by saying that Sister to Sister is not a new organization in the sense that we are nearly 30 years old.
And I was going to ask you about that.
Come January, we will mark our 30th year of togetherness. And while in law school, in fact, my second year, there were only three students ahead of me, one of whom, as I've mentioned, was the first to be Black woman judge here in Colorado, Claudia Jordan. None in my, in the 1L, as you know, first mm-hmm. year. And then once Claudia and the two fellows left in the third year class, I was the only Black student in the whole school.
It was you.
It was me. Mm-hmm. Just one brown face in the only, I should say one of two. However, my classmate, my colleague and friend, she did not look Black.
Okay.
Most people viewed her as white, but she was Black. But it was only the two of us left and only my brown face that was there.
Okay.
And it It had been such a lonely existence up until my third year when I began working at the Denver DA's office. And that was the year that I got to spend 20 hours downtown every day of the week, weekday, and just, you know, got away from that environment. But it was such a lonely existence. I almost left CU Law and transferred somewhere else. And I just remember one day praying and saying, Lord, I know you're going to get me through this study of law, and you brought me here for a reason. And I said, once I leave here, I will do all I can to help others not experience the loneliness.
What you were experiencing.
That I experienced. And so that is why I started Sister to Sister. It was just a vision that I say to this day was God sent. And we just, that is three friends of mine, and I just met Black women wherever they were, on the street, in grocery stores, at the gym, it didn't matter, and just invited them to join us at our first gathering, which was held at the home of Dr. Sally McKee, who you may know or may have known of. She was at CU for a time. And that first gathering in January of 1994, we had about two dozen Black women, and almost all of them were first from someplace outside of Colorado. And everybody just spoke about the loneliness, just having no one, no support really there. And that's how we came to be. And 30 years later, you know, it was during the COVID that the Holy Spirit spoke to me and just said, you know, from the beginning, you were to make this open to women all around the world. And that was the time that he enabled me to have the time to do what was necessary in terms of building a team. And he had already put, you know, the team in my life, the team of women who became board members and shown me who they should be. But that's how we came to be. And we are a safe haven, and we are a learning environment, a sharing environment. I have a perfect example for you.
Okay.
We have monthly gatherings every single month. And this past month in June, I hosted the gathering here at my home. And we had one of our sisters who is an audiologist, very young, new to Colorado, actually talk to us. And the engagement, because things that we would have never thought about or known, she was able to share. And we experienced that in a learning environment. So we had a great time with her. And then we broke away. And we always start our gatherings with prayer. And then we enjoy a meal together. So that brought us together in a safe environment where we felt comfortable enough to just acknowledge how much we don't know and to learn from someone who does know, and then share the knowledge, because each of us brought different kinds of learning to the particular question of audiology and illness and how that can affect pregnancies and children and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it was a great gathering. And the sisters always say, I appreciate these kinds of gatherings because when I'm out there in the day-to-day world, it's like I have to put on these masks and pretend that I am someone who I'm really not. I mean, that's part of me, but there's so much more to me.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And I'm valued.
Yeah, and it's exhausting, you know, to have to do that. So it's nice to be in a space where one doesn't feel the need to code switch, if you will, and just be.
Right.
And just be, and to feel that embrace. No, absolutely. Well, you know, Velveeta, I can't let another second go without asking you about Ketanji Brown Jackson. I've got to. Now, we all know, you know, she joined the Supreme Court very recently and, you know, has made history as the first Black woman to join SCOTUS, okay, the Supreme Court of the United States. First off, what was your reaction to her nomination?
That it was about time. Okay. That the time should have occurred much sooner than mm-hmm. it did. I believe that actually a Black woman should have followed Thurgood Marshall.
Okay.
And a Black woman of her character and her constitution mm-hmm. and her brilliance mm-hmm. should have been the second Black justice on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay. Did you watch the hearings?
I watched little bits and pieces. However, I was not able to bring myself to sit through those hearings because they were basically attacks on her, her character, her works,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
her decisions, mm-hmm. everything was an attack. And what I found long ago about those hearings is those senators have personal agendas, and really they spend most of the time sharing their own personal agendas in terms of taking up wind in the room.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
No, I did not watch very much of it at all.
No, I understand. So let me ask you this, given the current makeup of the Supreme Court, what do you think her influence will be? Maybe I'll rephrase that. What do you think her influence can be?
I think her influence can be sharing her experiences in the terms of lived experience and what she knows to be true and being authentic and just being honest and using president, the good president. I wouldn't say all of the president because you know, decades and decades ago, the law used to be just horrific. When it came to our lives,
no, absolutely.
Using legitimate precedent and adhering to it in terms of her decision making, mm-hmm. and also being a collaborative force with those other two justices, female justices, in terms of how they put forth what decisions really look like based upon facts presented.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at her being in league perhaps with Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan on the court?
Yes.
Let me ask you this, because there's been some conversation about it and it kind of ebbs and flows. As you know, the number of justices on the Supreme Court has changed 6 times. Before settling on today's present total of 9, would you, Velveeta, be in favor of Congress adding to the number of seats?
Absolutely.
Could you say
absolutely
more about that?
And this is one thing that I realize is not possible in the current environment, political environment.
Mm-hmm.
However, I believe it is absolutely necessary. And I think that it takes courage to step out there and do that. However, we are in a place right now where, although it is represented that we have 50 Democratic senators, we in actuality only have 48, two of whom are independents. They will never, ever agree to an expansion of the court. However, I always believe in possibilities and remain optimistic that someday, and perhaps not in the too distant future, someone will hold the presidency and be able to just step out and say, this is absolutely necessary. This is going to be first on my agenda. And that person will have the senatorial body in terms of composition to carry that out.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, you know, we began our conversation by talking about role models, talking about mentors, and Justice Brown Jackson talked about her original role models. She talked about her parents, of course. She attributed her love for the law to her dad. And during the confirmation hearings and in kind of in subsequent interviews and so forth, has talked about her father, who went back to law school. And went back to school, I should say, maybe a better way of putting it, went back to school to earn his law degree.
Yes.
And she was said, as quoted as saying that her very earliest memories are of watching her father study. She said he had a stack of law books on the kitchen table. And she said, well, she sat across from him with her stack of coloring books. But she talked about her high school debate coach who took her to Harvard to enter a speech competition. And she said that was the very thing that gave her the idea to apply there to college. She said her debate coach, Mrs. Berger, believed in me, she said. And in turn, I believed in myself. She also said, and this really speaks to what you've been saying and sharing with us, role models tell us what is possible. And in the absence of role models, often tells us what is impossible. And so, Velveeta, I wanted to end by asking you this question. Is there anyone in your life today who is showing you what is possible?
Yes, of course. I mentioned my mentees earlier. My mentees constitute an array of women from all different backgrounds, including Asian, Black, White, Native, Hispanic, all different backgrounds. And these are the persons who are showing me what is possible, because they continue to move forward regardless of what obstacles appear in their path. And even more so than that, they pay it forward. They pay it forward. And I was asked early on, because I've been mentoring since I was 24 years old, how do I repay you? And my reply is always, you owe me nothing. The one thing I would ask that you consider is paying what little I've given to you and will give to you forward. And that's what these women do.
You know, I don't want to have us end the show without asking a bit more about Sister to Sister. I want to circle back to that. If there are any listeners out there, Velveeta, who are interested in learning more about Sister to Sister, learning how to perhaps gain more information, join what have you. How would they go about doing that? And we can post some information on KGNU's website, but just for purposes of our conversation today, how would they go about that? Would they go directly through you? Is there a website? Is there a link, something that we can share with listeners now?
Absolutely. There is a website with lots of information and a join button on virtually every page.
Okay.
And the website is https://:// sister2tosister.org.
Okay.
And that's where they'll be able to find lots of information. And I would truly appreciate your posting the website on the network. And also, Michelle, I am going to, based upon your kind offer, begin sending you the announcements for our gatherings.
Okay.
Our gathering this month will be at the Botanic Garden.
Oh, okay.
So
okay. I know it well.
I will send you that. And we also have a walk, a nature walk, that's coming up on August 7th. But I'll send you the postings for both of those, and I'll begin sending them to you. And we also do a monthly newsletter. All the newsletters are on our website under the tab Resources, and they date back to September of last year because we did not formally launch until July of 2021. We took about a year developing Sister to Sister International Network of Professional African American Women Incorporated because we realized that a lot of thought needed to go into the creation of the organized public charity.
Got it. Got it. So if I have this right, you've been around for over 30 years, but this aspect, this kind of more recent aspect of Sister to Sister that has this kind of funding arm came about more recently.
Yes, and actually we don't have a funding arm at this point. We don't have a foundation, although we would like and expect to create one of those, because one of the things that we will definitely be doing is offering scholarships. Right now we offer internships. We've been doing that for the past 2 years. We are looking for interns. There will be soon online an intern interest form. So we're looking for that. Because we are a startup public charity, we are also looking for funding opportunities. We're especially interested in having new sisters join our public charity. And some sisters, because they're just not used to being invited into a sister circle where there are no obligations and no expectations at all, will ask me, well, what are the requirements? There are no requirements. You pay $25 annual dues, which helps us cover a little bit of our overhead, not much, maybe about 15% of our overhead. And you just come as you wish. We do virtual gatherings. We are always offering some aspect of education. If you visit the website, you will see that we offer a number of different benefits, and we will soon be expanding our programming. However, we need new members, we need volunteers, we need funds.
So I had the funding piece wrong. In other words, at this point, at least historically, where you are now, you are open to and welcoming in funds. So KGNU listeners, if there's anyone out there who's interested in supporting Sister to Sister?
There's a donate button online.
I was going to say, not only is there a donate button online, but guess what? The lines are open. So,
Absolutely. So feel free.
And in terms of the funding piece, again, that will grow and develop with time. But right now, you're open for accepting funding to help support some of what you're doing in terms of internships and defraying costs and, you know, allowing you to grow. So no,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Lavita, thank you. And it's nice to end on that note to hear a bit more about Sister to Sister. As I said, we will definitely get something posted on the KGNU website. So anyone who is interested knows what to do and how to access the site and can click the button and join. Click the button again, folks, to donate. And I love that. But I also love having you here. And I would like to thank you again from the bottom of my heart. I'm so appreciative of you taking the time to come on Black Talk today. And I have to tell you, you have the perfect name, Go Lightly, because your warmth, your spirit, and just your footprint is just so warm. It's so soft. But again, it's so rich. It's so potent. So thank you so much for joining us again today.
And the pleasure was all mine. Thank you, Michelle. I too am very appreciative.
Thank you so much.
For every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch. We gon' run with it now. Never look back. We done gone hundreds of miles.